Welcome back to the Groups Matter podcast. I'm Brian Daniel with Chris Surratt. And today we are joined by Ken Brady for episode 34. Glad everyone could be with us. Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm great. It is good to be in the room, especially with Dr. Brady and yourself.
Is he Dr. Brady?
Not yet.
I missed that
one. I'm halfway there.
Well, I come from an old school. My dad was a pastor, and they called everybody doctor, you know, so.
It's the way it ought to be.
Yes.
That's the rule that one of the few rules we have at our house is I'm called that, Dr. Dad.
Yeah, that's good.
That's bad. I need a bad joke, Bill. So we've had Ken on the show before. Ken is manager of Lifeway Adult Ongoing Bible Schools. A lot of Bible studies, a lot of people might know that as Sunday school. And Ken oversees the production and everything associated with, to be honest with you, Explore the Bible, Bible Studies for Life, and the Gospel Project. And I'm leaving something out.
Well, let's see. Masterwork.
Masterwork.
You,
yep.
All the other related side products that go with all those. Yeah, it's a big universe.
Which are many and varied. And just for the sake of credibility, Ken has 18 years as an education pastor.
Wow.
And prior to coming to Lifeway, how long have you been here now? Are you 10 years yet?
No, not quite. I'm coming up on 7.
And just as a note, on the practitioner side, you lead a weekly Bible study at your church. You blog regularly at Ken Brady, B-R-A-D-D-Y.
Thank you, 2 D's.
Yep. .com, and you have co-authored also books.
I have. David Francis has been absolutely great to allow me to participate in some of what we call the Franciscan Epistles. He does one of those every year, and we've got another one coming out in end of November. It's called Teacher Creating Commissioned Community. It's about getting our groups to think in terms of how they're going to share the gospel with their neighbors, family, and friends.
And while my off-air persona is prone to overstatement, as a rule of groups matter, we do not overstate. So I can say with integrity that Ken has written hundreds of leadership articles and trained group leaders across the country. Hundreds. I bet it's more than hundreds.
It probably is.
I bet. You need to change that in your bio to thousands. You should up that up to the next zero.
I will say, coming in, I didn't have much of a Sunday school background, so pretty much everything I've learned about Sunday school in the last year came from Ken and David Francis.
Awesome.
All the stuff you guys write. It's amazing.
So, Ken, do you want to tell us where you're from, or are you going to make me have to do that?
No, I can do that. I'm originally from Dallas-Fort Worth. Grew up in Arlington, Texas, and went to school at Southwestern, and so I was a Texas guy.
Yeah.
All my life.
Hook 'em horns.
Yeah. Exactly. That's who we pulled for when we were in Texas. Except, well, about half of us. We pulled for Longhorns, but I had a son that went rogue and decided he'd pull for OU. And so we had wars and rumors of wars every fall in our home.
That's nasty, man.
It was ugly. Yeah, it was ugly.
I grew up in Houston. We've talked about it on here before because we had a fellow alum at the University of Houston, which finally they're good. But, you know, for all the years, it didn't really matter because University of Texas was the power.
Mm-hmm.
But you would never say that you were an OU fan and live in Texas.
That's right.
No, that doesn't happen.
Well, my son took pride in it and loved to rub it in our faces, you know, whenever OU dominated. So, you know, it was tough.
So, Chris, we've talked about this before. Were you there during the Phi Slamma Jamma days?
No, I was. I'm not that old.
Okay,
Brian.
Okay.
I know. Oops. I am old, but I remember. I think I was.
You're ageless to me.
I was around 10 years old when they lost on that last second dunk. Everybody remembers North Carolina State and ran around the court and all that. And I literally cried. I sat there in front of my TV and I cried real crocodile-sized tears. It was tragic.
So, Ken, we've referenced your blog, KenBrady.com, and we have a post, I don't know how recent it was, but it's been the past few weeks, 10 Things Guests Wish They Knew. There's two parts to that, and we'll get to that in a minute. But before we entered into that discussion, I want to just, because you are in and out of so many conversations, both internal or here at Lifeway, but especially outside, I think we've asked you before on the show how many churches you are in or leadership training events you're in any given year. Do you remember that number offhand?
Oh, it was in the, I don't know, it was up there.
Yeah, it's a lot. So I wanted to begin just by giving our listeners an opportunity maybe to hear anything you've picked up in terms of like recent trends things you've picked up that maybe you've heard people talk about in other context or scenarios,
mm-hmm.
maybe even something you've read?
There are maybe a couple things. One is this, it really was birthed, I don't know, maybe a year or so ago, in a partnership that we had with some friends in Oklahoma, and we partnered together for a Bible study in Bible Studies for Life. And what we became aware of is that there is this growing interest among many state and church leaders to put evangelism back in the forefront of what small groups, Sunday school, you know, is supposed to be about. And it's probably something that we maybe did better at one, you know, point in history, and have majored so well on, you know, teaching the Bible that maybe we have forgotten that we're actually there to teach the Bible, but to have plenty of lost folks in the group. We're supposed to remain, you know, very outward focused. And I think that is something that groups are starting to rediscover, and pastors and state leaders are helping us with that message. And we're benefiting from that as we see groups, you know, reach new people for Christ, and kind of getting back to, you know, this idea that, you know, we're really here to make disciples. And that is a part of the process, is sharing the gospel. That'd be one thing. The other thing that I think that I'm seeing, at least in my little, you know, the world that I'm in, is a renewed interest in training, which I'm thrilled because it seems like for so many years the church has moved away from a regular ongoing plan for training its workers, Sunday school leaders. And just in the last week, I've been invited into four or five churches in early 2017. They're kicking off their years, their new Sunday school years, you know, with training events in January, February. So I'm encouraged by that, that there seems to be this idea that if we're going to get better, then we're going to have to train our people. And I think that that is a excellent thing that churches should be back to doing, is training their folks.
All right, so evangelism and training. So it's also worth noting that our co-host Chris Surratt here is in and out of a lot of churches and mm-hmm. in front of a lot of people, mm-hmm. a lot of people. I think you were like in South America in the last few weeks, right?
Yeah, and I'm going back in 2 weeks.
So yeah. So Chris, how does that, with what you're hearing out in the group world, in the, you know, off-campus mm-hmm. group world, how does that reflect what you may be picking up and hearing?
Yeah, I was going to kind of jump in on the evangelism piece, because definitely seeing that in the small group world, the off-campus small group world. And that's something that I talked a lot about in my book, because I think that we lost that a little bit with when groups went off-campus. It was thought of more as kind of for just the church people, and it was to disciple them and all of that, where I think that's good, but there's also a piece where we can still invite our neighbors. And it could be about evangelism. So I'm definitely seeing that trend more in the small group world as well. And I think it's also, I think it's a little bit of an easier ask sometimes, because you're not even inviting them to church yet. You're inviting them to your home and to your small group, and they may already have those relationships. So I think it's a good turn for a lot of churches.
All right. You said when groups started moving more off campus, what kind of date do you put on that movement?
You know, it's kind of funny, because I've always known that movement, so I'm not sure that that I have a divide that it happened. It feels like, at least in my world, that when Saddleback started introducing like 40 Days of Purpose, kind of the campaign model that a lot of churches that I'm familiar with, that's when they started experimenting with kind of doing more of the small group, you know, facilitated conversation, and then moving that off campus as they, you know, ran out of room or whatever. So at least for my experience, that's kind of when it felt like things started going that way.
It's like late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, we did it at my church when I was at Seacoast. We did it, and that was actually the first small group that I led, is we did a 40 Days of Purpose campaign. We all met in one room. It was the auditorium. We did tables. We led at a table, and then that table became our small group. We moved offsite into our house, and that started my whole small group journey.
So, Ken, in terms of evangelism in the group world, and this is like specifically on campus group, but I think it would be applicable beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
Who's doing it well, and what are they doing that would make them distinctive within this? Because this is what a lot of churches, most churches, if not all churches, are going to hold this up, and then they're going to be successful with their execution in varying degrees. So what are the distinctives that you've seen of the groups that may be doing this, or the churches, I guess is better put, that would be, that might be doing this well?
Yeah, that's a great question. Unfortunately, the list is probably pretty short. And it, you know, folks that I would say are really knocking it out of the park. I wish that I could say that about my church, where, you know, where we attend, and we're having to rediscover, you know, the importance of not just the Bible study aspect of Sunday school, but also the evangelism aspect. I think that what's happened is that, and I heard Bob Mayfield from Oklahoma, he's the state Sunday school director there, said this at a conference a few weeks ago. We were in Oklahoma at Falls Creek and training some Sunday school directors. And he said, you know, I really feel like evangelism has gone one of three ways in the church. Pulpit is one way that it's delivered. Persons, or number three, programs. And he said, I feel like in the church, you know, the number one mode of delivery probably comes from the pulpit, followed very closely by the church programs, like Vacation Bible School or camp or Sunday school, those kind of things. And he said, and then number three on the heels of that, you know, way back in the back, would be persons, you know, you and I sharing our faith. And he drew these three circles on a marker board. And at one point they were all, you know, the same size. So then he redrew them, and, you know, the pulpit one was the, you know, giant one. And then the programs, the, you know, next smallest, and then the real little circle was, you know, people. And it really got me to thinking when he was saying that. And I told him at the conference, I just raised my hand and said, hey, you know, I think you're onto something here, because I feel like, and I'm guilty of this, you know, that you might look at what the church is doing, you know, in the pulpit, the, you know, evangelizing that takes place there, the teaching about Christ in Bible study and Vacation Bible School and all those other things that we do, it almost could make a person think, I don't really need to do that much because, man, look, my pastor and, you know, the church is doing that, and I don't really feel a strong personal, you know, compulsion to reach out to do that because, well, look what all we're doing, you know, as a church. And so all that to say, it just, it feels like that's really kind of what's happened in a lot of groups and a lot of churches, that we have left the evangelism function, responsibility, whatever you want to call it, to the professionals, you know, to the pastor, the staff, the Sunday school teacher, or that really, you know, maybe very spiritually gifted in evangelism, you know, group member. That's kind of their thing. It's what God's gifted them to do. But the rest of us are kind of excused from that because there's other stuff going on and you know, Jesus is being preached. And so I think that if our groups can get back to the point of owning you know, the evangelism responsibility, I think you'll see the church function the way it's supposed to be. I wish I could give you a list and say, hey, look, here's, you know, three or four places that are just knocking it out of the park. But the places that are doing better probably have a very strong lead pastor that is reminding the church that this ought to be happening in groups and, you know, individually. And they've got probably a strong staff, either discipleship pastor, education pastor, whatever they're being called these days, that is also right there standing beside the pastor, you know, with a very similar similar message. I think those churches are the ones that, you know, will have a stronger evangelism ministry through their groups ministry.
One of our future topics is going to be to compare group ministry between regions, north, south, east, west, because I think there's some pockets and just communities and people and how we tend to relate changes so, I think, so dramatically regionally.
I would agree.
But, Chris, I would ask that same question to you. I mean, in the world of off-campus groups and group ministry and the circles in which you tend to travel and be most associated, what are you seeing in terms of evangelism and group ministry?
I think there are some churches that are doing a great job, but I would echo Ken that I could probably name them, you know, that I know of probably on one or two hands because that's kind of getting out of the box when it comes to using small groups as an evangelism piece. But, you know, in my head, Saddleback is just killing it on that. I mean, when they came up with the campaign idea and the host strategy where pretty much anyone can host a group and invite their friends and neighbors, and that was the the idea behind it was to invite people outside of the church, and that's how they have more than 100% of their people in groups, is because there's so many people that are attending groups that aren't even attending their church. And so I think when they kind of started that with 40 Days of Purpose and then continued it and with the campaigns, a lot of churches started following that model. And one of our future guests, actually Mark Howell, has done a great job of writing consistently about that topic and how to do it. But definitely Saddleback has kind of led the way on how groups can reach out to the community.
We had Steve on the show. It's been relatively recently, and he said not only are we one of the bigger churches around, but Steve would contend that they're also one of the healthiest. So that's not surprising that you would point to those guys in this context.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, every time I'm around that church, you can feel the excitement around groups and spiritual growth. And I think that directly relates to Steve and really to Rick Warren and just kind of the message that he has given his church about, you know, we are a church of small groups. We're not a church with small groups.
All right, one more question on this. I'm just wondering how either of you would respond to perhaps this is not a church culture or challenge as much as it is a challenge in the cultural writ large, and that is, in the wake of social media, have we lost some of the art of discourse and conversation or persuasion? I mean, are we dependent upon the bites and the characters and the post more than we are face-to-face interaction? And have you seen, you know, that affect what we're talking about with this idea of evangelism with interpersonal or personal evangelism?
Great question. I think at least what I see in my social media context, I see more boldness online than what I see between person to person. And maybe that's because you don't have somebody live sitting there looking at you, ready to, you know, come across the table, you know, or interact at that particular second with you. You can say things online or in social media that you just might not say, you know, in a live conversation. And so I have seen folks be fairly, you know, in your face, not confrontational in a good way, I guess, in sharing what they believe spiritually. So that's a good thing. You know, that's the, I guess, the upside of social media and what it can do, you know, as people have these kinds of conversations.
Yeah, I think there's some opportunities, too, for using social media, especially for kind of that training piece as well. I've seen lately kind of a trend to do training with Facebook Live to, you know, for the small group pastor to get on there and kind of let his leaders know, I'm going to be on there, I'm going to be live. You know, you can ask questions and kind of interact that way. So I think there's an opportunity there with social media that small group pastors and point people can really take advantage of and go to where people are instead of expecting them always to come to us for training and all of that. They can actually be in their space if they use Facebook and, you know, some things like that.
Mm-hmm. All right. So thank you. KenBrady.com. So October 19th, Ken, you posted 10 things guests wished we knew.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that I think a lot of us just don't realize, is that how absolutely exclusive a lot of our groups are when people walk into them. Because with a lot of us out there, it's just what we do. It's what we've always done. It's not just the people we see that can change, but the thing that we do in group ministry, whether it's on campus or off campus,
mm-hmm.
is something that we've grown accustomed to. And I've said it on the show before, but one of my favorite quotes all time is, I'm not sure who discovered water, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't a fish.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you've been in it for so long, you lose the distinctives. And so I thought this post was really good, and it was two parts, but I think you came ready to talk about both of them, but I've just talking about part one.
Sure.
This was October 19th at KenBrady.com, 10 things guests wish we knew. And I'm just going to run down these five, and then let's just camp out here for a minute, because I think this is good in terms of the conversation we just had, or that exchange we just had about evangelism,
yeah.
just to keep these things in mind. So first, and this is from, looks like this is from the perspective of the guest. So the we here.
That's correct.
Are the people that are coming into the group for the first time.
That's
okay,
right.
So first thing, we are anxious. Visiting a new church can be a harrowing experience, you said. I put a note out there. Is it really harrowing? You know, that's an interesting thought, that that as leaders, if we just assume that this was a harrowing experience for everyone to come to group for the first time, how would that change how you go about anything in group life, if that's true?
Right.
We evaluate everything. And in the post, you said it's nothing escapes our scrutiny because little things tell us a lot about you and your congregation. Was there a directional sign pointing me to the guest parking? Did a parking lot greeter help me out to the car and into the right building? Was the bathroom clean? This idea of being hypersensitive makes me wonder. I've heard people say on both extremes, no one said hi to me.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other extreme, they smothered me when I came in the door and I didn't even have a chance to think. So in between those two extremes, we've got to make decisions. Third thing, we feel like outsiders. I would ask you, you know, in a moment to think about, so what do we mean by outsider? I thought that was particularly insightful. I think it's, when I hear that word, I think it reminds me of like sitting down in the middle of a movie that's been going on, you know, for 45 minutes already, sitting down, and it's really disorienting. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, good.
We are hopeful, and we don't want to be identified, or 4 and 5.
That's right.
So first, let me just begin with so what prompted this. I'm curious, as a group, because you're a group leader and have been for years.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about this.
Yeah.
So what prompted this?
This is the genesis probably goes back almost 7 years when my wife and I were visiting churches here in this area, in Nashville, for the first time in almost 20 years. We had come off of church staff and were looking for a church home. And I was pretty excited, to be real honest, in the beginning, because for the first time, Tammy and I would be able to worship together. When I was on staff, you know, I had responsibilities, and a lot of times our family, you know, we couldn't worship together. So we were really excited that we got to go do church together. We got to pick a Sunday school class or off-campus life group to be a part of. We got to pick the church according to the worship style, the size of the church. And so it was just, we were like kids in a candy store. And we were really excited, and we were this this hopeful couple, you know, that were coming into our these churches and trying to connect relationally. We were 12 hours away from our nearest family back in Texas, and so we were a little lonely. And, you know, we're feeling that, you know, here in Middle Tennessee, and just we're looking to reconnect, you know, with some fellow believers. And we had a really nice support system that we were a part of at our church in Texas, and just wanted some new friends, you know, kind of replace those ones that we left, you know, back in Texas. And we were surprised how hard it was in the months that we visited churches to connect with people and to connect in groups. So that's probably, Brian, the genesis of this is I was amazed at how hard it was and how hard we had to work to fit in to churches that we were visiting. And this is churches of all sizes. We visited big ones and little ones and everything in between. And we visited for months, and we were just surprised at how hard it was. And then part two of this, where'd this come from, is what I've seen as a teacher of a group now for the last 3 years. And our group is exactly 3 years old this month. In watching folks come into my group and either stick or not stick, or come into the church and stick or not stick. And so as I write my blog posts, I'm always thinking about, you know, how do I help a fellow teacher, group leader, or someone, you know, like a Chris Surratt, who's in charge of a group's ministry, you know, at his church. He's responsible for all the group leaders. That's really who the blog's aimed at. And so I wanted to pick a topic that, you know, would be timely. And most of us are hopeful, you know, that we're going to have guests in our group, and our groups are going to grow and, you know, change over time and be healthy like that. So that's really the genesis, I think, of, you know, where this particular, you know, post came from. And then some of the things that are in here came from my experience and just in talking to people that have come through my group, things that they have shared, you know, as they've had conversations with us.
It was funny reading this because my family and I went through this exact same experience about a year and a half ago, 23 straight years of being on a church staff, never even thinking about, you know, where are we going to go to church? You know, that was just our life. Mm-hmm. And so we came off and had the same feeling that this is going to be a blast. You know, I've never visited churches other than being on vacation and
right.
usually went to a friend's church or something like that. So we visited a ton of churches. And after about, I would say, 3 or 4 weeks of that, we were done. I mean, we yeah. were like, we need a church. And we hit all of the things that you talk about in this this blog and really saw it through eyes that we had never seen it before. And we did the same thing, big churches, small churches. But as you look at this list, how would you weight the different things? What would you say is the biggest one? If you were going to just dive in as a church leader and say, we need to look at it, or a group leader from the outside, what do we need to tackle first?
I think on this particular list, number one and number three are the ones that I would go after if I was a church staff leader and or a group leader. Number one was the fact that we're anxious. You know, they want us to know that this is not an easy thing to come to a church and be off balance the entire morning. You know, there were groups that we churches we visited. And we did not know walking in the door this church is a dress-up church. Mm. And I was in jeans and boots and stuck out like a sore thumb. Mm. And it felt like everybody was looking at us, you know, that kind of thing. There are times that we visited churches and we didn't know the worship songs, you know, not even one. And so it was hard to fully participate and engage in worship. We kind of felt like, you know, we were on the outside looking in. You know, and so you think about families that have to come and drop off children, and they're going to entrust their kids to strangers and hope that, you know, things go well and they've got a good experience and the security system works and, you know, the teachers are trained and know how to deal with children, you know, those kind of things. I think if we've not done that in a while, and if you've not visited a church and tried to fit into a new group, I think that we really lose sight of how hard it can be, you know, to put yourself out there and to try to fit in, you know, to a brand new place. And so many of our churches and our church members, we've been together for such a long time. I think we've really forgotten how hard it can be for a new family coming in to connect with our people, even though we feel like we're friendly and, you know, we feel like, hey, we're ready for them. In many cases, we're really not. And so that raises everybody's anxiety level when they hit the church campus, and a few bad experiences, and, you know, folks, they'll check out, and we'll lose the opportunity to minister to them and maybe have them, you know, unite with our church.
I think it's helpful too, every once in a while, to bring in somebody from the outside with fresh eyes, like
yes.
a secret shopper,
yes.
consultant, to see things that you're missing.
Absolutely. When we were selling our home in Texas to come here to Nashville, we had a realtor come into our home and did the evaluation, and I had in my mind a price and all that, and when he walked through the home and sat down with us in the living room, he gave us the price that he thought the home would sell for, and it was significantly lower than what I had in my head. I'd done some research, and I thought I was, you know, ready to go, and it was significantly less, and my wife said to the realtor, you know, well, you know, why is this so low? You know, this is much lower than we were thinking. And he said, well, honestly, he said, you know, you need to do a few things. He said, you need to replace the tile in the kitchen, and you need to replace appliances, and you need to paint the walls a different color, and you need to declutter. And that's the one that sent my wife over the top, you know, declutter, you know, my house, you're talking about my house is messy, what? And she and the realtor, you know, they didn't get into it, but the tension got raised. And his point was, he said, yeah, you really do need to declutter. Your closets are too full. You've got too much furniture. He said the best thing you could do is to go rent a facility, you know, put this stuff in storage temporarily and really, you know, empty out the house to where it feels bigger. And the reason he said these things to us is because he came in, Chris, with fresh eyes. We had grown so accustomed, you know, to the tile and the paint and the clutter and all that. We just didn't see it anymore. And I think in our churches, we can do the same thing. You know, we don't see that stain on the carpet in the foyer, but the guest walks right over it and that turns them off. Or, you know, they see the classroom that's got chipped paint, and that communicates a lot about that environment that their kids are in. But we quit noticing the chip. You know, the chip's been there forever, and so it's no big deal. And so you're right. I think a set of fresh eyes is extremely valuable.
Chris, which one of those popped out the page for you?
For me, as I'm looking at it, I think the we feel like outsiders. That really kind of jumped out at me, because walking into these different churches and just feeling like, you know, I really relate with not knowing any of the songs. We've gone to churches that greeted us like they were going to invite us over for lunch, and that was too much. or there was nobody at the door. We had one church where we had to actually go track down the program or the bulletin because there was nobody there to hand it to us. And, you know, you stick out.
Yeah, you do. And the outsider one is tough. We were sitting in a group. We'd actually been visiting a church and had just about decided to join this particular church. And we're in a small group, one of their small groups, and had attended this small group for probably 3 or 4 weeks in a row. And this was the week right before Christmas or so, about 2 weeks before Christmas. And they were having their Christmas fellowship that night, an ornament exchange, you know, bring some snacks, you know, church providing child care for the kids, that kind of thing. So we were really excited. You know, we loved those kind of evenings at our former church, and we're just excited as all get out that the class was talking about doing that. And the thing that didn't happen that day is they did not invite us to come. And we were sitting right next door in the circle to the teacher and his wife, and they talked through the Sunday night fellowship that we're going to have and bring an ornament and bring a snack and those kind of things. And they never looked at us and said, you know, Ken, Tammy, we're so thankful you've been visiting this group. And, man, we want you. Don't bring anything tonight. Just bring an ornament. You don't need to bring food. We have plenty of food. But just want to come get to know you. I mean, that would have absolutely made all the difference. But we left church that day feeling very defeated and just feeling like we couldn't connect with that group. We felt very much like outsiders. That party was for them. It was not for the new guys. And so we just made a decision that afternoon that we just decided the Lord was showing us this was not going to be our church home, and we went a different direction and joined a different church several months later.
How have you managed to mitigate the effects of guests feeling like outsiders? What are some tips that you would give churches or groups to kind of lower that?
You know, the best tip I've got is not mine. It actually is borrowed from a friend of ours here at Lifeway, our Sunday school director, David Francis. It's kind of a little running, we'll call it a running gag or a running joke in many of his books that he writes. He talks about the importance of name tags. And I've read every book that David has written. I've underlined in every book, you know, where he's used the word, you know, name tag. And it's in just about everything that he writes. And he's exactly dead on, straight dead on right about that. In my group, since we started meeting about 3 years ago, Chris, we have had stick-on name tags every time the class meets. Even when we were brand new and it was just, you know, four or five of us coming together, I started making the group, you know, fill out name tags. So they walk in the door, put their name on a name tag, stick it on, and off we go. And we've done that for 3 years. And I've had visitors just recently, like in the last 30 days, no kidding, that have said to me, we have been visiting other churches, other groups. We love this group because you guys wear name tags and we are learning people's names. And thank you. This makes it so much easier for us. And I've told my group when we don't have guests in the room, I'll take a moment and just do a little coaching with them, and I'll say, hey, folks, I know that we filled out name tags again, and no, we don't have a guest here with us today, but the reason we do this is it's almost like an act of faith that we're expecting God, you know, to bring somebody to our group, or somebody that we've invited is going to show up, and we want them to be able to call us by name, and we want to be able to call them by name, because there's really nothing better sounding to a person than the sound of their own name. And so that makes sure that when a guest comes, I can look them in the face as we're having the Bible study. And if they make a comment, I can absolutely say to them, you know, like I did a couple of weeks ago, we've got a guest couple right now, Patty and Murph Davis. And the great couple. And I've been able to look at them and not blank on their names and look right at them and go, Patty, that's a great comment you made. Or Murph, that's a really good point that you bring out. And I think it kind of surprises them, you know, that we're able to use their name in conversation, but it's a big deal to the guests. So it's an inexpensive thing to do, but I think it's a very important thing to do.
Outsiders is the one I would have picked too, but I wouldn't necessarily have landed with the answer is ... name tags. It's like something off a Monty Python.
Well, I always think about the about the Seinfeld episode, you know, where Kramer wanted everybody in the building to wear name tags.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually had a group once. I hope they're not listening.
Don't make it too hard, right? I mean, just name tags. Just go name tags.
Well, we had a group at one of my churches that I was telling them, hey, we need to be sure we're wearing name tags. And they took my words literally. And the next week, I walk into their classroom, and everybody in the room has on these wonderful, expensive, you know, $8 to $10 each, magnetic backed name tags, you know, engraved with their names.
The best, Ken.
Oh man, they went, you know, Cadillac version,
gold plated.
And
so if you come in from that, you are an outsider.
And the teacher said to me,
maybe we should just keep them with us. All if it would go into a strange place, you just whip it on. Yeah.
There you go.
Always takes the barrier down.
Well, the teacher, you know, put me on the spot in front of the group. This is a group of like, you know, 25-30 people. And he said, look what we did. He said, you asked us to wear name tags. He goes, look, man, we went to, you know, this Office, you know, Depot or Office Max, and we had these things made, and we paid for them, and we're going to wear these every week. Don't, and he said to the group and to me, looking at me, he goes, don't you love the name tags? And I looked at him, and I looked at this, you know, group of folks, and I said, folks, honestly, I don't. I said, I really don't. And he was shocked. I mean, he was absolutely blown away that I said that. And I followed it up real quick, and I said, you know, look, I said, if I was a guest and I came into your room, what am I going to wear? And they went, oh. And they realized that the guest would not have this nice. They said, well, you know, if they come enough, you know, then we'll get them one made. And I said, well, you know, you
got to earn it.
They're probably not going to come back. You know, you're not going to have that opportunity.
Got to earn that name tag.
They won't
and,
be back.
And
so you could make them stand up and introduce themselves and say, you don't get a name tag until your fifth time. We could break about five of these rules. Right.
Absolutely.
Here.
You know, well, they said, well, we could get a stick-on name tag. Well, okay, great. Everybody's got on the nice ones, but they got all the stick-ons, you know. And so here's what happened. The group, I left the group.
Hey, but there's a new book idea, How to Do Name Tags.
There you go. I could write that one. I could actually do that. So I came back in the room the next week, and they all had on stick-on name tags. I'm not making this up for illustrative purposes. They threw their name tags away.
Wow.
And they decided that they would go with the stick-ons so that everybody in the group was on equal ground, including the guests. And I was able to go back in there and affirm the teacher, affirm them for that decision. I said, this is tremendous, because now, you know, folks don't feel like the outsider. They're part of the group. They look just like everybody else. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a good one.
All right, one more question, Ken. Are you most excited about Rogue One or Doctor Strange?
You know, I don't know Doctor Strange. Yeah, I don't know Doctor Strange's character in the Marvel Universe. I am excited about Rogue One.
Marvel fans.
I do know the Star Wars universe. So.
You could be both. I am both. I'm equally excited. Because I'm the same way. I don't know the character, but I do know Benedict Cumberbatch. Big fan. And Rogue One, I mean, how could you not be excited?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
I guess we're going to see if there truly is Marvel fatigue out there.
Yeah.
When Doctor Strange, because that's not, you know, we've had these big releases over the past years. This one's not quite as big.
Yeah.
But it's coming. The storm is coming.
It is.
Ken, thanks for being with us. That's KenBraddy.com, BRADDY. Just as a reminder. Ken, you're on Twitter as well, right?
Yes, I am. It's just at Ken Braddy, and you can follow me there on Twitter, and we'd love to have you.
Ken, also very active on Facebook, so I would encourage you to find me there. And if someone wanted to get in touch with you about maybe coming and speaking, how would they do that?
They could email me through my Lifeway email account. That'd be a very easy way to do that, and that's just ken.braddy, B-R-A-D-D-Y, the symbol for at, lifeway.com.
Well, it's been wonderful. Let's do it again.
Thank you very much. See you guys.
And Chris, we are sponsored today once again by smallgroup.com.
Smallgroup.com, online database of over 2,000 Bible studies that your church can customize, your group can customize for your context. And you just go to smallgroup.com, get a 2-week preview, and it'll change your discipleship experience. Is that too big?
No.
Okay. It's a great tool.
All right. No, I didn't want to overstate like we normally. Okay, cool.
That's right. No, we don't overstate at Groups Matter.
No, we don't. It'll revolutionize your groups.
That is an accurate statement, because we don't overstate. Thanks for being with us. Join us again for episode 35.